The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, delivering an unrivaled range of assets, inspect and repair services across the globe.
Hello and welcome to the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester. This week has seen the First Minister sign a groundbreaking energy deal in the Middle East, the first meeting of the Fiscal Forum, a good end-of-year report for an Aberdeen company, startling figures released on UK drilling, and an Aberdeenshire company turn back time for a renewable energy project. The First Minister was in the Middle East this week to agree a groundbreaking deal on renewable energy. Alex Salmond met airlines interested in creating new links with Scotland before attending the World Future Energy Summit in Abu Dhabi. He put pen to paper on a much-anticipated deal with the world-leading green energy innovator Masdar, which could bring new jobs and investment to Scotland. Mr Salmond spoke to North Sound's political editor Colin Mackay before heading out on his trip.
Well, very important. When I was there at the back end of last year, there was the prospect of actually getting an agreement, a technology agreement with Masdar, which is the Abu Dhabi Renewable Institute. And lo and behold, we've managed to negotiate one in a short space of time, which means there'll be a signed agreement between Scotland, Scottish Enterprise and Masdar. The first time Masdar's ever had an agreement with a country as opposed to a major company. And that will mean joint research, joint investment. Masdar is a leading and incredibly well-financed institute from Abu Dhabi. And Scotland, of course, is in the forefront of renewable technology. So, for example, leading the way in the Scottish end will be something called the Energy Technology Partnership, which is an alliance of 12 Scottish universities already engaged in energy research, 250 academics, 600 researchers. It's the largest, most broad-based power and energy partnership in Europe, and that will be moving into joint ventures and co-investments with Masdar. And it's a great thing for Scotland. I mean, this is a huge, not just feather in our cap, we can get as many accolades as we like. You know, this is going to lead to joint research projects, it's going to lead to jobs, it's going to lead to technological breakthroughs, and it puts Scotland even further up the league table of the energy initiatives and the nations which are looking at green energy research as the way of the future.
Most people judge these kind of things by jobs. What could we be looking at potentially? It's not specific, obviously, it's not direct, but what could it lead to?
Well, we're signing the agreement on Tuesday. That's being signed, incidentally, at a conference which is attended by not just some of the leading politicians on the planet, like Premier Huan of China, for example, but a conference which has something like 30,000 delegates from around the world interested in energy. I'll be speaking at that conference as well, but it really puts Scotland right bang slap on the highest rung of the ladder as far as energy research is concerned. Now, if you mobilise the investment for joint technology partnerships, Scottish research, the cutting edge of Scottish research, and it can be financed, and well, who knows, you can't really estimate the jobs to come, but certainly it's going to lead to a number of breakthroughs, a great deal of promotion of Scotland, and it's exactly the sort of thing that Scotland needs to be doing at the cutting edge of new energy technology.
This week was the Big Energy Week, organised by Citizens Advice Scotland. Research released to support the campaign showed just over a third of Scots are worried they can't afford their next fuel bill. This comes as many of the big suppliers have been announcing price cuts following a reduction in the price of wholesale energy. But the drops are much smaller than the increases towards the end of last year. Citizens Advice have been issuing tips on how to save on bills. Here's spokesman Matt Lancashire.
You can look to see if there's a cheaper method of payment to pay by perhaps direct debit, switching websites to actually see if there's a cheaper deal for gas and electricity out there which can save them hundreds and hundreds of pounds over a year, or they can speak to their current gas and electricity provider to see if there's an actual way that they can get free or part funded insulation to warm the home. People are making that stark choice whether they can put food on the table, pay their rent, pay the mortgage, or pay their energy bill, and some people will take that option of cutting back on food, cutting back on turning the heating on, cutting back on having electrical lighting products on it and other products as well. Over a third of people in Scotland at the moment are worried that they can't afford to pay the next gas or electricity bill. We've already got 40% of households living in fuel poverty in Scotland. When we've got a third of people in Scotland telling us that they worry that they can't afford to pay the next fuel, we know we've got real issues.
Oil and gas bosses are cautiously optimistic of better conditions for the sector in 2012. The first meeting of the Fiscal Forum was held in Westminster this week, with senior industry representatives and MPs round the table. Oil and Gas UK Chief Executive Malcolm Webb was among them and spoke with me after the meeting.
The first meeting of the Fiscal Forum, which we had on Monday evening at the Treasury, it was a two-hour engagement, and it was a very constructive one. I think everybody who was there from the industry came away encouraged somewhat by the engagement. Now, we weren't told what was going to be coming up in the budget. Wouldn't it have been nice if we could be told that, but we can't be told that. However, I think we all came away with the view that the government was minded to try and do something constructive in the upcoming budget.
Because there really was just such a devastating impact for the industry and quite a surprise as well in the last budget. So you'll be hoping for some moves that can perhaps secure more investment in the upcoming budget.
Yeah, most certainly. Yes, the last budget was a complete shock. It came completely out of the blue and took us entirely by surprise. It was contrary to all the sort of understandings that we really had. So it was really a big shock. But ever since then, frankly, we have been working with the government. We've been working on two major issues. One is trying to bring a measure of certainty as to the availability of decommissioning reliefs. And the other strand of work has been looking at new field allowances, which we believe are necessary in the light of the budget. Now, if we're successful in this, there's at least 3 billion barrels of oil and gas that can be released for development as a result of this, that are blocked, if you like, by the current regime. If we can get these changes and get those 3 billion barrels into development, then that's exceptionally good in terms of, well, the general economic benefit, but also in terms of jobs and energy security for this country as well. So it's big stuff, really.
And with a body like the Fiscal Forum, is that a good opportunity to be able to make sure that, you know, surprises don't happen again and to really just stake the oil and gas industry's claim for the importance that they have to the UK economy?
We hope so. We hope that the Fiscal Forum is going to give us an opportunity to constructively engage with the government about what the structure and design of the taxation regime should be, so that we can make sure that we maximise the recovery of the reserves of the North Sea. I don't think the government's ever going to come into a Fiscal Forum and tell us what the rate of corporation tax next week is going to be or anything like that. But we can still have a very, very constructive engagement around the structure and design of fiscal policy, in which both the industry and the government should have a shared and common goal, and that's to maximise the recovery of reserves from the North Sea.
And hopefully see some more exploration drilling after the fall in 2011.
I think that's a very good point. When one looks at 2011, it's not a very happy year, is it? We've got exploration drilling falling to almost an historic low. We've got production in decline. And actually, the government's seen a fall in its tax receipts. It's reduced its estimate of tax it's going to achieve in this year by £2 billion. So 2011... Not a happy year. Do we ascribe all of that just to the budget? No, but some of it definitely is attributable to the budget. Other parts of this, I think, again, are us inheriting the problems that we've got for the fiscal instability that this basin has suffered over the last 9 years or more. And I really do hope that with the new Fiscal Forum and with the budget 2012, we're going to see something of a new beginning and put this industry on a much more stable and predictable standing going forward as far as tax is concerned. It's very important that it happens.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stark Technical Services, delivering asset integrity solutions to the global energy industry.
Aberdeen-based Craig Group announced healthy results for the year ending April 2011. The global shipping and energy services firm has reported turnover of £111.9 million. The group, whose core activities are the provision of offshore support, ROV survey, emergency response and rescue vessels, provides employment for around 1,000 people. Chairman and Managing Director Douglas Craig says it's been a great year for the company.
Our turnover has increased from 92 to 112 million, and profits up from 10 to 13 million. So I think the higher oil price and subsequent increase in oil and gas activity is having a positive effect on our business, particularly on CIS, our procurement division, which has international business. We're also seeing the return on our investment in our fleet, which is now one of the most modern in the United Kingdom continental shelf.
I mean, obviously, Craig Group's capital expenditure in this year was $16.4 million.
Yeah.
Much of that was spent on your emergency response and rescue vessels. Can you tell us why this fleet is such a top priority when it comes to spending?
Well, the oil and gas industry rightly demands the best vessels and crews to look after its people offshore in the event of an incident. And through our investment, our rescue vessels are now the most modern and, in fact, the largest British-owned in the North Sea.
And what do you think makes Craig Group so commercially competitive?
Well, we've always stressed quality, service and safety, which we believe keeps us ahead of the competition. We're delighted to be supporting the community as well as business here, and we are continuing to invest in new builds of vessels, creating employment locally, and to service the oil field in the best possible way.
New figures released this week reveal drilling activity fell 34% across the UK continental shelf in 2011. The end-of-year review from Deloitte documents drilling, licensing, field developments and new field startups. It shows a total of 49 wells spudded compared to 74 in 2010, the lowest level since 2003. Graham Sadler from The Analyst spoke with me about the figures.
During 2011, levels of exploration appraisal drilling activity were 34% lower in the UK than levels in 2010, although in Norway, Netherlands, Denmark and Greenland, levels of activity in 2011 were better than or equal to those recorded in 2010. The number of field startups has decreased also in 2011 compared to 2009 and 2010 for both UK and Norway. However, the number of field development approvals has risen in both countries, with a significant number of projects announced in the UK. These include three BP projects, Clare Ridge, Quad 20, 204 and Kinnoull projects, so that's quite exciting. Overall deal activity has remained at similar levels when compared to 2010. However, compared to 2009, levels of activity have decreased by 25%. Farming deals remain the most common type of deal in the sector. In 2008 and 2009, farming deals were less common and asset acquisitions were more popular. Recently, we're seeing much more farming activity as companies look to spread the risk of their developments. 2011 also been a successful licensing round year in UK, Norway and Ireland. In the UK, a number of small and new companies, as well as companies with traditional onshore focus, have come offshore. So some interesting developments.
The fall in the amount of drilling, what would you credit that to?
Well, certainly the 2008 financial crisis has led to a more cautious approach to existing and new investments, with a constraint in access to the capital markets. And also you've got the fact that farming activity has been affected by financial stress, companies looking to mitigate risk as well. But I think on the drilling side, it's been the financial crisis leading to access of capital has been a constraint. Obviously, we've had the change in tax regime has had an impact, and we won't see, I don't think, the full impact of that for some time ahead, but obviously it affects people's planning and confidence in the sector.
But as you said, some very interesting developments there as well. Would you anticipate that carrying on into 2012?
Well, I think we are in a mature geological province, so the level of activity, inevitably there will be some decline. We would hope that there are incentives for companies to continue to explore. Clearly there are developments coming on stream, so I think there are opportunities for companies in the sector, but obviously being a mature sector, we're not going to see, I wouldn't expect significant growth.
But the big projects that you mentioned, especially with BP, is there's still work to be done there in the UK continental shelf?
Yeah, absolutely. These are exciting developments. Some of these fields were discovered some time ago, but with new technology and new developments, they become economic to push forward into production. So there are some exciting opportunities out there still.
But no cause for concern, as you say. It's to be expected, really, that the drilling levels are going to fall.
Yeah, it's inevitable that in an area as mature as the North Sea, which has been explored for many years, that we will see a fall-off in both production and activity. So that would be not unexpected in an area like the North Sea, whereas in the case of the Norwegian sector, that's been less explored, so we're not seeing quite the downturn there that perhaps we've seen in the UK.
So what do you think can be done in 2012 to just ensure that we're getting the best possible out of the region?
I think most companies would hope for some degree of fiscal stability and potentially some allowances and some incentives for areas which are difficult to explore, or, for example, heavy oil has been one area where the government has assisted with allowances, high pressure, high temperature. When there are difficult subsurface conditions, technically, then allowances from government have certainly helped to encourage development of those resources. Marginal fields, any sort of field which has a tricky development scenario, then it's encouraging that development is critical in the North Sea.
And finally this week, a Northeast company has turned back time to power their porridge factory. Mournflake have erected a modern-day windmill next to their Banff oat mill. The £3.5 million turbine is harnessing enough wind to power the mill and feed extra into the national grid. Director Alan Meikle spoke with me about why they embarked on this unusual project.
My name is Alan Meikle and I'm Managing Director of Hamlands of Scotland.
Okay, Alan, so if you want to tell me about the new method that you have of powering the mill up there.
Right, well, oat milling, if you go back for hundreds of years, we used to use water to power our mills, then we used wind, and you remember the days of Windy Miller, and steam, and then into electricity. Obviously, with the advent of sustainability and having to protect our planet, we're looking at other ways of producing the energy that we require for our mills, so we've looked backwards. Notice that wind is obviously available in the northeast of Scotland, so we've now harnessed that by putting up a wind turbine, which is now feeding the power to our mill.
So you've gone full circle there, and it's successful?
It is, yes, we have gone full circle. We've gone back. If you'd been around a couple of hundred years ago, you might have not seen a mill building that looked like this, but in terms of technology, it would have been exactly the same. And yes, the wind turbine we've put up is entirely successful and is producing the power that we require for this mill.
And is it producing any extra there as well?
It does. It produces more than we require, and any extra is then sold into national grid for everyone else to utilise.
So just how big an undertaking has this been for the company?
The cost of the turbine was £3.5 million, which is obviously a fair bit of money for any company to put up, but we believe we're here for the long term, and that will help us sustain ourselves going forward.
So it really is combining, quite a few of the great traits of the north of Scotland with it being renewable energy and also our famous weather.
Absolutely, absolutely. The weather helps us in two respects. One, we obviously have use oats, and oats grow on soil like our own, and with long daylight hours and lots of water, we have that in abundance. And we also have wind in abundance. So add the two together and you come up with the windmill.
So is this something that you would encourage other companies to think about?
Absolutely. We're always hearing people complaining about the northeast of Scotland in terms of its negatives. Well, let's turn this around. What we have got is renewable energy in the form of wind turbines. And I know if they're not sited correctly, then there can be issues. But in terms of siting them in the correct places, they can be very positive to both us here in the northeast of Scotland, sustainability for our businesses going forward, and also for helping us as a nation.
And as you say, there can be a lot of protests surrounding different elements of wind turbines, but you've not encountered that yourselves in the project?
No, we're in Boindydrome, which is 3 or 4 miles west of Banff, and that area is very, very rural. We have very few neighbours around about us, and in that respect, very good for putting up wind turbines.
And the Secretary of State for Energy has welcomed the move as well, so that's obviously a good recognition for the company of the good work done.
Yes, I mean, I think he has recognised that as a business we have looked at our long-term sustainability and tried to encompass our long-term sustainability as well as protecting the planet. So the two sides have come together, and I think he would welcome that in all sorts of other areas with all sorts of other companies.
And that's the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, global leaders in knowledge-based asset integrity management solutions.